But now everybody's wondering, like, where are these guys at? What's going on?
There you go. Don't stop mid-stroke, man. What you got?
All right, keep going.
What I was saying is, did you see that thing with Elon? He tweeted out, he's like, do you guys realize that the census is what determines how many electoral votes there are? They're flooding the country with illegals. Those are going to be counted in the census. That determines the number of electoral votes. This is the thing. Somewhere between 8 and 20 million illegals completely remapping the electoral process.
Mm-hmm.
I had a good call. Well, I got invited onto a show the other day with this candidates coalition group, and they're Green Party and Democrats, and you know, you take the opportunity wherever you can, where you know you can say, hey guys, listen, you've got some understanding of this kind of stuff. And I basically kind of laid it out for them, like, the political solution's off the table right now. I mean, that's why Bitcoin is so damn important. You know, I know we've talked about politics a lot on the show. We've said, hey, you know, maybe we should get away from politics a little bit in some of these shows. And, you know, like, rightly so, because at the end of the day, you know, politics is a losing aspect for anybody that doesn't want ESG, that doesn't want DEI, that doesn't want any of this, you know, ridiculous, you know, LBGQQTRS, you know, trans shit rammed down your throat. Like, it's a losing proposition, because that's what the powers that be in fiat want. And if you're close to the money printer and you're looking at destabilizing and, you know, making America a different place, it's exactly what you have to do. So, you know, this transition into a Bitcoin standard couldn't come at a more important time than right now.
I agree, because the politics are just going to get heavier and heavier. And we talk about restructuring the electoral college, the map. I mean, you know, where are these individuals, these illegals being put on these buses and sent to? Okay, it's happening strategically and for a very specific reason. There's a plan, and that's the thing, and that is why it's more important now than it ever has been for us to reach a Bitcoin standard. Because we need to have the opportunity to opt out, especially going into this year. And I'm not trying to freak everybody out or get anybody scared, but anybody who's watching this is already thinking this stuff anyway. But I mean, I'm going to be shocked, okay? Given the stage being set now for the big rematch coming up, you know, on the presidential election, I mean, do we really think that the election is going to take place? And that's where my mind is. Are they going to let it happen? Because I'm getting like these echoes and like these twitches of it's starting to feel like March of 2020. Okay. March of 2020 is when all hell broke loose and they seized that opportunity to take away our freedoms, which many people just kind of threw on the ground and said, yeah, please just take them. Don't let me die from the terrible monster flu. Just take whatever you want. Keep me safe. But that's the thing, is then we have these massive destabilizations happening, like freaking barbecue zombie cannibals flooding into Florida.
Was not on my bingo card.
I wasn't expecting that one. But I mean, it's things like that that cause certain individuals to say, well, wait a minute, let's just pause everything. Okay, we decided not to have an election. It would be too destabilizing, because they're already calling it the biggest threat to freedom and democracy since the Civil War. What the hell? And I mean, I just have to say, I do live in the South, and the Civil War wasn't necessarily about the Confederacy attacking freedom and democracy. I'm going to say that some people down here still call it the War of Northern Aggression. Just going to put it out there. Okay.
They still got their grandfather's money.
They still got it going on, man. But anyway, it was nice knowing you, YouTube. We're probably cut off of there now.
Oh, man. You know what's
funny about that? What episode are we on? This is episode 36. We've estimated that every single episode in, we're going to lose YouTube. But we haven't yet. So I don't know what's going on there. Legions of angels protecting our podcast or some shit. I have no idea. But we're still here. And we will continue to create these shows until, in fact, we do get kicked off of
YouTube. And then we might just talk into the vast blackness void that there is out there. So without further ado, let's fucking go.
Oh,
And welcome to Bitcoin Veterans, ladies and gents. We're Bitcoiners. We're veterans. This is real simple. We are here to put you guys back on a mission. There is a 16 million vets out there in America alone, and more around the world that were told something about freedom and passion and liberty and sovereignty and all that amazing goodness that we always wanted and signed up for and pledged our lives for. Bitcoin Veterans is here to restore that, to rip out the old paradigm and really go extremely hard for this new Bitcoin standard that we're pushing through, the bright orange future. That's what we're here for. I am joined tonight by Gabe and Alex Danzik. Apparently, Mike and Jordan, we may have to take them out of the opening credits for some reason. They're busy again. They're out. I tell you what, Dennis coming in right under the wire there. Our guest tonight, is Dennis Porter. You guys probably know him. He is the CEO and co-founder of the Satoshi Act Fund. President and founder of the Satoshi Educate, and they are going on the offensive for the Bitcoin miners out there here in the U.S. He travels around all over the place. Man, it's good to see you. Good to have you here, and appreciate you showing up. We were like, man, he's going to be a no-show. We're going to have to shame the shit out of him.
There you go. Yeah, I dodged it just in time. Yeah, sorry, I was over in the Google Meets and was on. I was lucky to have someone send me the link just in time to be able to pop on here. Excited to be with you guys. I got a couple at least of some good friends on here. So good to see you, Shane and Alex, and Gabe. Good to see you as well. Looking forward to getting into all things Bitcoin.
Yeah, man. Before we start, we always like to start with some announcements. I'm going to lean on Alex a little bit for this. We've got quite a few of them, and they are big. You guys are, if you haven't gotten tickets to things, here's your chance. Alex?
All right. So just a couple of things. By the way, Dennis, good to see you, man. Glad to have you on here. I don't know if you got my message. I shot you a message on Twitter DMs. You're probably going to laugh when you see it. But anyway, yeah, some things that we've got coming up next month. If you want to go to the halving party, we have tickets, ticket discounts for that. If you are part of Bitcoin Veterans or you want to be part of Bitcoin Veterans to take advantage of any of these things, just shoot us a DM. Look for us at Bitcoin Veterans on Twitter, and we will hook you up. We've also got an amazing discount to BitBlock Boom. That's going to be fantastic. I'm going to that. Shane's going to that. I know there are others as well. Gabe, are you going to that? No, not going to be at that one.
Okay. Not going to make that one, man.
He only does the international shit these days.
Yeah. I'm still recovering.
Yeah. So we got that coming up. Then Nashville is going to be right after that. We will be doing the Bitcoin Veterans Citadel. Bitcoin Magazine has been gracious enough to provide us with a really big breakout room. And we're going to be doing a bunch of breakout sessions up there, stages, talking about ham radio. We're going to set up a ham radio relay network across the United States of America, connecting all the Bitcoin citadels together that we're all the Bitcoin veterans guys are connecting up. Other things like Start 9, we're doing workshops on that, mesh networks, a whole bunch of other technical stuff. We've got some really brainiac kind of veteran type dudes who are essentially like cyber warfare guys that deployed with SEAL teams and all that other kind of spooky stuff. They're going to be there teaching a whole, but they're Bitcoiners, by the way, where we get more of them all the time. They're going to be there teaching this kind of stuff. We're going to be doing a range day in Nashville. If you're interested in learning about firearms, we're going to be conducting an amazing day of fun, learning how to shoot, whether you're basic, intermediate, or advanced. We're going to have some former Special Forces guys out there teaching you very safely how to do the pew-pews. If you're interested in that, come hang with us. And then finally, Pacific Bitcoin. We've recently been given a huge discount to Pacific Bitcoin. It's so huge, I can't even say what it is. So you have to contact us if you're interested in that, and we will get you hooked up.
Might be even more huger than everything else.
It's the hugest one out there, as far as I understand.
It is huger. It is the hugest by at least 1%.
At least. One thing I want to throw in there too is at Nashville, we're going to be working with Mi Premier Bitcoin on their unconference that they host. This will be their third one. They had one in El Salvador last November, had one out of Madeira a couple weeks ago. and going to have another one down there. So we're going to be partnering up with them. It's awesome. I don't want to drop names or anything, but a couple guys were at the last one, some Jeff Booth, Preston Pish, BTC Sessions. And don't forget, there's going to be a whole bunch of Bitcoin veterans running around. So it's an opportunity for you to come down, get plugged in, and do the thing. It's going to be an awesome year, and I'm looking forward to all of it.
So make sure you don't miss Mining Disrupt, June 24th to the 26th. It's all things Bitcoin mining, and we'll have to hook you guys up with your own special, even huger discount. We gotta out compete. We will have the biggest, most beautiful discount that you've ever had. No one will beat us.
Oh man,
it's gonna be huge.
I love it.
It's a bold statement.
We got Senator Cruz bold coming to speak, and we're gonna have a bunch of other Bitcoin miners there. So if you're into Bitcoin or Bitcoin mining, you know, come hang out. Well, as a side note, and this is we'll have to figure out what we'll do with you guys. I think we might have to give you some very, very excellent boat tickets, because we have our benefit that day as well. We have a yacht poker party on the boat in Miami. And so if you come to Mining Disrupt, make sure you swing by our yacht poker boat benefit. Wow, so many words.
What are the dates for that? Mining Disrupt, Miami?
The main dates are the 25th and 26th in June, and 24th is sort of like the entry day, set up your stuff day. But 25th will be, Senator Cruz will be speaking. We'll have the boat poker yacht benefit party. And then the 26th will be the last day.
Cool.
Nice.
Yeah, should be a good time.
If you're out there, before we get started, go out there, smash those like buttons, forward this out there into the Twitterverse so more people can get some signal, and subscribe on YouTube. It all helps with the algorithms and push Bitcoin veterans to the top of the amazing amount of content that's already out there in Bitcoin. But tonight we got Dennis Porter, man. You're a busy guy, and you're running around doing some really important things. I think there's a lot of information out there in terms of what's going on at the government level, federal and state, which is all important. But you've been running and gunning for a while now. I mean, you're not home. You're traveling all the time. Tell us, just give us a 50,000 foot level, and then we'll kind of dive in from there of what you're doing and kind of what your schedule looks like right now.
The schedule's a little mad, that's for sure. But I'm having a ton of fun out there fighting for Bitcoin and for Bitcoin mining in the political arena. I've been traveling the country. I just got back from a 3-state tour. I think coming up, I'm going to go to Washington, D.C., New York. I'm going to go to Arkansas. I'm going to go to Texas. So we're all over the place. We're fighting for the states. We're sort of bearish on Washington, D.C. We believe the states are going to be the ones that lead. They're going to be the ones that push Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining forward from an adoption perspective and also a policy perspective. And it's very much in alignment with just like the American ethos, right? Like bottom-up approach, go to the states, advocate for your issue, and hopefully that carries forward into something that inevitably impacts federal policy. We've seen this happen before. We saw it happen. For those of you that don't know, FDIC insurance was a manifestation of a bunch of different states trying different things out, and eventually they adopted the best one at the federal level. We see it also playing out right now and right in front of our eyes with cannabis. You know, cannabis is an issue it's way worse than Bitcoin. You know, it's still a federal crime. You can't get banking, and you don't have access to a lot of the things that regular businesses do have access to. And so they've been fighting for their issue at the state level. Sorry, I don't know what your audience is on the cannabis issue, but I assume it's generally somewhat supportive given where Mr. Shane stands on the issue. But they fought for their issue at the state level, and they have been able to advocate and move forward successfully. Now, 75% of the country has pro-cannabis legislation on the books at the state level. And you see, you know, people on the federal level saying we got to move this stuff off the schedule and or down the schedule, so to speak. And so that's where we see Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. We want to follow that same exact strategy. We want to go to the states, advocate, get this stuff passed, and then eventually use it as a way to influence federal policy.
Awesome. Let me ask you a quick question, because your approach is a little bit different than, for example, like the Bitcoin Policy Institute, where they're going mostly straight to DC. And they're trying to, I guess, they're trying to educate and influence at the federal level. And you are doing a more grassroots approach. And Can you talk a little bit about the differences between the two, like, and why do you think that a state level grassroots approach is maybe more efficient use of your time or a better way to attack?
Yes, certainly. I mean, for us, at the end of the day, we ultimately believe that the sort of power that Bitcoin unlocks and the changes that it will make to our power structures is ultimately going to be relatively untenable to whoever controls the federal government. You know, right now, people think, you know, oh, well, if we just get a new administration in, that all of a sudden we're going to become a better place for Bitcoin. I'm not necessarily totally bought in on that idea, although long term, I think that will, that could happen and probably will happen given enough time. But in the near term, right now, Bitcoin is a, and Bitcoin mining, they're both threats to the current status quo, particularly Bitcoin. You know, think about the federal government. What do they have control over? What is their biggest power? It is the money printer. They have total control over the money printer. They can push it at will. They, in fact, barely even need to govern because they can just hit that button. They can just expand the debt ceiling and all the problems go away. We just repeat this problem of trying to decide if we should raise the debt ceiling, which we do every single time continuously with these like sort of fake emergencies. So I don't think that anybody who has control over that system is going to say, you know what? I really, really want to reduce my power at the federal government, and I want to adopt Bitcoin as the new technology. I want to have it subvert the current system and move to a new system. I think inevitably, given enough time, I said this, that we will see our country move the right direction, but I don't think it's going to happen, like I said, at the top. I don't think it's going to happen at the federal level. Although I pray sort of every day in support, send positive energy to my DC people out there because I hope that they can win. But I'm not expecting them to win. I'm not betting on them winning. I'm betting that Bitcoin will be successful at the state level, very much like the cannabis industry has been successful, and that it will permeate up through to the federal level. And keep this in mind, too, as well. As we're going to the states, state by state by state, educating lawmakers, getting them on board with Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining, those people are in a really strong position to now move up into the federal system with the belief that Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining can have a positive impact. And that's really, really important because you going and cultivating champions, cultivating people to take on the issue in Washington, D.C. has proven to be very, very difficult. Now, we're fortunate. We do have some, particularly people like Senator Lummis, who have championed the issue. But getting a broad bench of people to be pro-Bitcoin at the federal level is very time consuming, very, very, very resource dependent. And it can honestly ultimately just fail in the long term. And so what we're doing is a long-term approach that can be successful. We're working with these states to go the right direction. And in the case of Bitcoin mining, this will be my final point for those people that might be concerned about Bitcoin mining. The vast majority of energy policy, the vast majority takes place at the state level. So there's just no reason to even be in Washington, D.C., unless you're trying to make sure that, you know, Elizabeth Warren doesn't come crashing down on you, which is probably really the big value add of those D.C. groups, is just make sure something really, really bad doesn't come down the pipeline. But if you want to go on offense, if you want to score wins for Bitcoin, if you want to move the ball forward on a consistent basis, it's all at the state level.
Hell yeah, man. I mean, I love the grassroots approach because – you know, the old Ron Paul saying is you can't stop an idea's time that has come, right? This idea is permeating more and more and more people. Where in the nation are you finding the most success? I mean, I look at Bitcoin and I see this conglomeration of a lot of people from a libertarian standpoint now that maybe weren't there in the past, right? They've kind of come and coalesced around the idea, which is very like hands off decentralization. Let's you know, make sovereign the individual and hold them on the pedestal in this decentralized money. Where are you seeing geographically the most success in making some inroads for Bitcoin mining and you know, maybe even anti CBDC federal government stuff in the U.S.?
Yeah, so for us, it's a great question. We have seen the early adoption take place predominantly in red states. And I don't necessarily think that's a pattern of political belief. I don't necessarily even think it's a pattern of whether this is a right or left-leaning issue. I think it mostly has to do with the fact that off the cuff, it's an easier pill to swallow. And also for the fact that right now the Republican Party, and this is a theory that I've thrown around quite a bit, and I firmly stand behind it. The Republican Party is more of a grassroots party right now than the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party is very top down in its current form. Hasn't always been that way. I mean, if you go back just 30, 40 years, it was sort of flipped, right? Yeah. But these trends tend to flip. They tend to move. And right now, the Republican Party is very grassroots. It's very bottom up. There's like tribes. There's factions. I mean, there are tribes and factions in the Democrat Party, but they tend to fall in line more so than the Republican Party. So this has created a dynamic where Bitcoin as an issue can permeate up from the bottom through the Republican Party right now. And that's why we're seeing some more success in the red states. However, I do think that dynamic could shift. Typically, it does shift those types of dynamics when there is a party in power that switches. So like right now you have, you know, Joe Biden in power, you have the Democrats in power, and not only is he in power and thus the de facto leader of the Democrat Party, the whole party as itself is very, very top down, specifically because he's president. Now, if you flip that and let's say you have a Trump come into power and he's taken over and it's more so ran by the Republicans, I think you could see a dynamic shift where Democrats are going to start to go, oh, wow, you know, this is a really powerful tool in case Donald Trump does something that we don't like. We have this backup system. You know, we have the ability to connect to the digital economy, and it could be anybody. It could be anybody in any country. It could be any leader, any world leader abusing their power or just simply using the powers that are, you know, given to them by the people. And the people that are out of power are generally going to be very attracted to Bitcoin because Bitcoin is very, very, very good at protecting the rights of the individual. It's very, very, very good at making sure that we have access to the digital economy no matter what anybody does. And so automatically by moving out of power, it puts you into an incentive mode where you are now like, oh, I think this Bitcoin idea is not such a bad idea. So I do believe if we do see an administrative shift, not necessarily are we going to see mass Bitcoin adoption take place at the federal level, although it could cool off. But we will see, I think, a little bit more openness to Democrats or left-leaning people that see it as a tool for accessibility, for financial inclusion, which is true. It is one of the most powerful financially inclusive tools that we have available to us. So anyways, I'll pause there. I think that we're going to see a lot of this take place predominantly in the red states. However, just as a note to people, we have Democrat co-sponsors on our bills. So for those of you that don't know, we have legislation active in 12 plus states, and we have had 3 Democrat co-sponsors. So we are making inroads with Democrats. We are even moving into purple states, and our goal is ultimately to move into blue states as well. As a last note, this is exactly the same thing that happened with the cannabis issue, but in reverse. They started in the blue states, and then now they're moving into the red states. And we plan to do the same, but other way around.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Kind of a follow-up question to that, if you guys don't mind, and I'll unleash Gabe on you after that. When you see this, you know, proliferating over the red states, I can't help but think that maybe it's because the energy is cheaper in a lot of cases in red states, and therefore you've got a mining lobby, you've got more miners. I know Georgia is one of the better states on this, and then you've got Texas. It's, you know, home to quite a few, like Riot and the rest of those guys out there. But the idea that this is proliferating in red states first, you know, do you have a message for people out there in the bluer states where, you know, if they could help to, I don't know, push and move their representatives in a direction of reducing the tax on energy itself, that mining, what mining brings to their economy?
It's a great point. You know, separating Bitcoin from Bitcoin mining, which is something that we often do with our policy and with our education. I do believe that you will see different adoption patterns for the two different technologies. As a quick example, you know, in the US, despite how often we hear Bitcoiners, you know, sort of lament about the dollar and the hegemony dollar that it has, the petrodollar, it is still a very, you know, it probably historically the most effective currency we've ever had. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to maintain that position. I think it's people have rightfully lined out a way where America will not always be able to lead if we're not careful on that issue. Keeping Bitcoin out of that conversation completely, we see threats popping up all over the place. We see concerns. But ultimately, just we're not in a situation where it's like hyperinflation, currency collapse. I'm not trying to debate anybody that it couldn't happen in the future, but just we don't see that right now. But we do see on the mining side, we do see a lot of problems right now in America that need to be solved, that Bitcoin mining can solve, particularly in the case of any sort of intermittent energy asset, whether that's wind, whether that's solar. Those assets, those energy assets, cause a lot of problems on the grid. And a lot of those problems can be at least mitigated, or if not made better, some people would say solved completely, if you integrate Bitcoin mining into that system. And so if you're like on the left, or you're an environmentalist and you just deeply care about wind and solar, and that you deeply care about decarbonizing the grid, like you should be obsessed with Bitcoin mining. But we don't see that taking place yet. And so certainly in states like, you know, some of these blue states that do want to build more carbon-free energy assets, Bitcoin mining is a valuable tool. But I don't even need to have that sort of conversation in some of these red states, like you're, I think you're rightfully pointing out, is this, it's off the cuff. They're just like, yeah, we get this. It's pro-energy. Let's do it. So we do. It does take a little bit more of a long-term conversation with some of the blue states to help them see the value of Bitcoin mining as a demand response, you know, grid balancing technology that can help them achieve whatever their energy goals are. And this is a, I'll end on this point. This is what we say to every state that we go to. Bitcoin mining is a tool that you can use to achieve your energy goals, whatever those energy goals are. If you want to decarbonize the grid, if you want to build a coal power plant, it doesn't matter. Like you can do whatever you want. And so it's up to the states to decide, how do you want to use the technology? Because the answer should not be like New York. The answer should not be, let's ban the technology. The answer should be, oh, this is really good for renewables. Let's push it that direction. Or it's really good for hydro and nuclear. Let's push it that direction. Certainly New York is probably not going to like coal plants, but you know, other states are going to have a different viewpoint. So we really want to see the states view it as a technology that can be used however they see fit and however their energy goals align with that vision, and then just push it really aggressively that direction, and try to stay away from also more of the punitive stuff that we've seen happen in states like New York.
Oh, well,
that's okay. Awesome, man. Yeah, great work, man. First of all, do you have any type of sample legislation that anybody can have access to you know, like start getting their minds around it and see what's being done out there? I'm curious to know, you know, what the template looks like, how much it is modified and adjusted depending on which state legislatures you're going after, communicating with. What does that look like?
Yeah, we have model policy up on our website. You can go look at that. And then we have that bill, our model policy is converted into a bill, and that's been done in 12 states. And you can see sort of the different ways the different states are approaching things. We try to do the whole package. And we approach it also in a very tech neutral fashion as well. So, you know, oftentimes people will say, well, why doesn't it say Bitcoin in the bill? And to be honest, I wish it could say that. I actually tried to do Bitcoin only bills for a little while, but it started to get in the way of making actual progress. And so we switched the terminology to digital assets so that it could be a tech neutral approach. Because what ended up happening is, you know, you have 5 minutes to pitch, if at best, you have 5 minutes to pitch a lawmaker on why they should pass a bill. And if you go in there and you start off by the conversation about why Bitcoin versus crypto, that's a very deep, long philosophical conversation that is not going to happen in 5 minutes. It's not going to happen in an hour, right? It's going to take a long time to get there. And we do work with lawmakers in the long term. And there are some that jump right away, they jump up and say, hey, you know, I want to do the Bitcoin stuff. But generally speaking, if we want to make progress, it's better to approach the policy from a tech neutral fashion. This is actually not even something that we came up with or developed. This is a policy culture in the United States that has been developed over the last 50, 60 years. It started in the tech era when tech started taking off. They started trying to design laws and policies around how to help tech be regulated and how to help it, you know, flourish in the USA. Well, what happened was they would make one piece of policy for something over here, and then the tech would move around and switch a little bit and, you know, evolve, and then that policy wouldn't encompass the new technology anymore. And so what they learned to do is, instead of trying to make policy that's specific to a technology, is they came up with this terminology called tech neutrality. And they just made it tech neutral all across the board. You'll hear lawmakers say this term like all the time, that they enable, even brag about how their policy is tech neutral, because they consider it to be sort of like an elevated form of policy. So we take that same exact approach, always with Bitcoin in our minds and with what we're trying to accomplish. But ultimately, it's going to be focused around the digital asset ecosystem broadly. But the best part about it, too, is it also reduces the tax surface. Because I don't know if you had seen this, but in the early days of Bitcoiners trying to become politically active, some of them did try to do Bitcoin-only policy, and they were sort of attacked from their flank, right? They were essentially attacked by the crypto industry. So we don't really want to see that happening either way. We're all about Bitcoin. We're going to do what we need to do to help Bitcoin be successful. And people can go check out that policy. They can read it. It's our model policy up on our website. And then you can also read the individual sort of when we take the model policy and they put it in a law, it'll look way different, right? Because we just craft the model. It's sort of like an idea. And then the lawmakers will actually get take the state lawmakers will take the state lawyers and they'll turn it into like state statute, which is not something that I do. I'm not a lawyer. But fortunately, every state has these drafters that will draft it into state code for us, as long as we get a lawmaker to be interested in introducing it. Mm-hmm.
What type of engagement do you anticipate with the National Conference for State Legislators in the future with this?
Well, we want to see our state lawmakers that have had success with this legislation to go and communicate with other state lawmakers and get them on board with what we're doing. I mean, there's so much opportunity here for states to secure themselves as a leader on the technology. We've seen states like Texas and Wyoming do a really good job of exploring potential policy solutions on how to attract the industry. And we just want to see a lot more of that. I want to see the states competing with each other, because right now we just sort of see some red states competing and there's a little bit of competition happening in sort of some more purple states. Mm-hmm. But I want to see these states just like going after it, because if we get all the states competing for this industry, ultimately America and Americans will be better off.
That's some healthy competition. About how long do you anticipate it'll have to obtain sufficient data for them to start comparing numbers on the impact that it's having within their own states?
I mean, you can already have data on the impact of Bitcoin mining alone in Texas. And that's something that we're very focused on. In fact, when the EIA put out their survey asking for energy usage from Bitcoin miners, we put out a survey of our own that we happened to be working on simultaneously 2 weeks before they launched theirs. We were just like, hey, we should get a survey. I don't know, maybe the EIA somehow whispered in my ear or something like that. But we both started working on a survey at the same time without either of us knowing that they were doing, the other party was doing it. So we put out our survey. That survey says, you know, we don't want just energy usage. We want also curtailment data. And so we were able to collect over 1.5 gigawatts of curtailment data from Bitcoin miners in the month of January, where we will be able to show with real credible evidence that Bitcoin miners are balancing the grid, having an extreme value add. Nice. For those of you that want to see it, I do write a little bit about this every once in a while. There's a couple articles out there. I did one for CoinDesk, but there's also one on our website where I talk about what Bitcoin mining can do for the grid. And there is this really, really powerful moment in time that occurred in Texas where there was Winter Storm Elliott. It came down. Texas wasn't prepared. Started to knock off their energy assets. Power plants were tripping offline. The demand for power was going up because it's a winter storm, people trying to heat their homes. And ultimately what ended up happening was the Bitcoin miners there in Texas curtailed at least, if not more, 1,500 megawatts of power. And for those people that don't know what 1,500 megawatts of power is, I'll put that into context for you. 1,500 megawatts of power is enough power to heat 1.5 million small homes, or it's enough power to energize 300 large hospitals. So it's an incredible amount of power. And it happened when everybody else was like, I need power. And the miners were like, you know, here you go. You can have this power. And that's just something that I don't think people have really wrapped their brain around, that is that's possible with Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. Mississippi, that's going to be some great stuff going on in there. I see the comment down there, but Mississippi is going to be another good state for mining here coming up soon. There's going to be some very big investments going on there. But yes, that can happen today. We can show the value now, and we have been doing it. For those that don't know the two organizations, we have Satoshi Action Fund, which does the policy, sort of educate lawmakers. But then we have Satoshi Action Education, and that is a research arm, and it's led by Dr. Murray Rudd, 20, 25 years of experience in academia, doing this type of work, but we use his expertise to craft real research, credible evidence-backed research, hopefully get that through the peer review process. And for some reason, whenever you get something through the peer review process, these lawmakers are like, all right, I'm listening now. I think it acts as somewhat of a shortcut, ultimately, for people to understand and believe that something is true. And so we're trying to be producing more of that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, any shortcut that they can take to having to expend those mental calories, you're doing them a favor. Because I mean, the fact is, they're reading. You know, I mean, they're reading all these bills and all this stuff, and they're like, just give it to me and show me where to freaking sign. Give me a reason. Don't give me a reason to disagree with you, and I'll go ahead and I'll do it. I think that's a great approach. Do you notice any trends in the type of support that you get on the state level between legislators that may be are nearing the end of their elected time? Those that might be approaching, potential reelection, or those that are lame ducks. What does that look like to you?
Yeah. Without stepping into the world of trying to say that our grandparents don't get this technology too much, but certainly you do see a diversion. But this is true with any type of technology, new thing that comes along. You know, when you're at the end of your career, you typically think that you've got it all figured out, and you're not really open to new ideas. You're just trying to put your capstone on and move on to the next segment of life. Some younger people really do get it and understand it, but we do run into folks that are, in their elder years, and they really see the value of the technology from a principal's perspective. They might not understand the technology from a technical perspective, which I would say most people probably don't understand Bitcoin mining from a technical perspective or Bitcoin broadly, but they understand the values of, being able to protect the individual and to be able to give people access to a technology that they can't be discriminated against. And then with Bitcoin mining, to be able to solve some of their energy solutions. So I haven't seen certainly you're always going to get new people in and new people want to try new ideas. That's just normal. But I haven't seen a divergence between like our issue and like other issues. I don't see like a broad rejection from people that might not be open to new technologies any more than they would to any other type of technology.
So what I'm hearing you say is we need more Bitcoiners to run for office. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Well, I will tell this to Bitcoiners, though. This is, if you need some advice on how to run for office, the biggest thing is going to be, you can't just run on Bitcoin, but just make, obviously it's going to be a big issue for you for your whole life and for everything that you do. But you got to learn what the people in your community care about and also run on those issues as well. That's the thing that I've had to tell people. They try to run on Bitcoin. I'm like, listen, I love it. Theoretically, I'm running on Bitcoin right now, right? I'm just focused on Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining with my my sort of nonprofit work that I do. But if I ran for office, I can't just be like, I'm running on Bitcoin, right? You got to run on a broad package of issues, that kitchen table issues that people care about, and learn how to tie Bitcoin into that story. And that's how you can really be effective. But yes, we need more Bitcoiners in office, 100%.
I'm reminded of that meme after running for governor on a Bitcoin platform, of Michael J. Fox after he plays in front of the high school. He's like, you guys might not be ready for that, but your kids are going to love it.
Like, exactly.
The time is coming. And I really think it is. Is this generational passing? And I think, Dennis, you make a very fair point. I deal with, a lot of people who are, older in their years over at Swan on a daily basis. And it shocks me when these guys come in and they know Bitcoin, they know it, as well as most of the younger crowd, if not better sometimes. And I think it's because they have worked their entire lives. A lot of these people, entrepreneurs, grinding, right up until the very end, there's no retirement in sight. And these people, they see it, and I think it really, something inside of them, deep inside of them, that core 20-year-old that they have that thought the American dream was obtainable, and now their savings and everything that they busted their ass for their entire life is getting melted, and they're thinking about their legacy. That's an amazing thing. They're thinking about legacy and leaving this stuff behind for the, their, not only I think probably their kids, but maybe for somebody else, because what they know about Bitcoin and what it's going to be in the future is going to affect not just their progeny. It's going to affect a ton of people outside of that, especially if they're reinvesting. So yeah, that's I think that's a great point that you make. I very poignant question in terms of have you run into specific lawmakers around the country that you have just kind of fallen in love with in terms of their receptiveness to this idea of Bitcoin mining in their state and kind of taking up the helm? Because, it's one thing to sit here and kind of hit a lot of these older policymakers that maybe don't get it, that will never be in tune, but to uplift some of these people that are in tune with Bitcoin mining and Bitcoin to understand it and how it's going to help them. Is there anybody that sticks out to you?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I would have to, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Senator Zolnikov in Montana. He was the senator there that introduced and helped us to get our policy introduced and then eventually passed into law in Montana. That was our Right to Mine bill. And Senator Zolnikov certainly understood, very well the potential of Bitcoin mining. He'd even mentioned how, you can bring someone in to buy up all the excess energy when there's nobody there to buy it up, and that then instead of trying to export energy, that they could bring Bitcoin mining to the state and then export the power to the Bitcoin network. And that was, you know, what, almost a year and a half, 2 years ago when we started having those conversations. So this is not something that happened just yesterday. And so we're really looking forward to going back to Montana to be able to continue to build on policy success there. The right to mine bill was a bill to protect Bitcoin mining, but now we want to see states like Montana be able to adopt policy and energy policy that really just changes the way that things are done there, but in a positive way, right? We want to see Bitcoin mining be able to participate in the grid and be able to help to enhance the grid in ways that haven't been done before, but are being done in other states, right? Like we see, this is the thing, the great thing about it too, about states like Texas is you don't need, this is not an experiment anymore. Like we already know these things are possible and that they're happening and they can happen and that they will continue to happen if we let them. And that's where policy comes into play. Policy comes into play to be able to shape how we adopt new technologies, how we integrate them into the grid. And Texas got a little lucky because they had these policies in place before Bitcoin mining came around. And then Bitcoin miners came in and proved how valuable those policies are for Bitcoin mining and for the grid and for ratepayers. And so we just want to see more of that take place across the country. So Senator Zolnikov is my answer. Montana, he's a great guy doing the Lord's work up there. We've had some other folks as well. But from a Bitcoin mining perspective, I think he'd have to be, you know, top of the list.
Incredible, man. I love hearing that because, you know, it's so easy. I mean, in this day and age to just be the shit out of politicians. and for the most part, right. I think, you know, most of them deserve it. So, you know, good on you for
well, at least a couple of them deserve it for sure. At least a few.
Just two. That's it. Only two.
Okay. Just two. We'll be kind to all the rest of them. So, a couple of thoughts here. Number one, Senator Warren came out with this DAAMLA nonsense some time ago. It started seemingly gaining a lot of momentum. She had lined up all of these bankers in the banking lobby. They basically wrote her legislation for her, from what I understand. And she got him in live testimony. And they said all these bad things about Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. And then, you know, I guess she had something like 100 sponsors or something like that, co-sponsors. And then it just kind of died off and went quiet right after the launch of the ETFs. Do you think that's a coincidence or what do you think happened there?
I try not to get into the business of questioning motives, but we have, you know, seen that playbook before where people in government seemingly are well positioned to suppress the price or the value of something. And then all of a sudden, lo and behold, you know, 6 months or a year later, the biggest asset managers in the world are scooping it all up. So I don't want to assume anything. I also do believe that Senator Warren does have an issue with Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. I don't think it was created by any means of communicating with people that are outside of her office. I think she's got some really bad advice that's coming in, which is very unfortunate. I think her anti-Bitcoin and broadly really it's sort of crypto, right? But her anti-Bitcoin position leaves a lot of Democrats and people on the left, you know, questioning and wondering if they should be supportive because she is well-liked on the left, at least by voters. She's got a very strong national brand. She's ran for president before. So, you know, a lot of people here in my hometown of Portland, Oregon are fans. And fortunately, the ones that like Bitcoin can see through it, though. And it's very strange to have, you know, people on the left that are ardent Democrats and environmentalists even that are saying for the first time ever in their life, they're disagreeing with Senator Warren and agreeing with Senator Cruz from Texas. So it's an interesting dynamic that she's found herself in where she clearly isn't getting good advice, doesn't understand Bitcoin. I can see some of the concern around, you know, some of the crypto issues, but really on the Bitcoin issue, she's just way off target. And so much so that it's, you know, I think ultimately will blow up in her face. But yes, she's pushed very hard to get the 20 co-sponsors on to be able to backdoor
closer to 100. 20. Okay.
Yeah. I think it was about, I think it was about 20, but maybe she got more. And she started to push the legislation forward. And she tried to pitch it as like, light touch regulation. It's not light touch regulation.
It's not light touch.
It might be short. It might be short, but it's not light touch.
It's not light.
It's like a
light.
It's like a ban hammer, basically. Like, well, they,
DAAMLA, whatever the hell it is, like the way it was worded, from my understanding, is it basically requires every single participant in the Bitcoin ecosystem to KYC each other, which is literally impossible. Like, if you understand the technology at all, you simply can't do that. So it would essentially be a ban. Like, it's like you need to collect KYC, but you can't. So that means what? You just have to stop, or you're a criminal. It was pretty right. It was pretty nasty stuff.
Yeah, Alex, 100%. It was a backdoor ban on self-custody, and it was a backdoor ban on mining, both with the same intention that you'd have to mass report everybody. I mean, and even if you are a mass report KYC maxi, like, the problem is not whether we should or we shouldn't. The problem is that you can't.
You literally can't do it. It's not possible.
And so if you say you have to, then you force them to, then you're basically saying that you can't use the technology. And that's a really dangerous situation to be in. Particularly as it pertains to self-custody, we are huge. Bitcoin mining is close to my heart. It's a big area that I care a lot about. But aside of that, protecting self-custody is probably one of the most important components of Bitcoin that we need to protect. Because if you get rid of self-custody, I mean, what are you doing? You're buying an IOU. You don't own Bitcoin. You don't actually engage with the technology. You're not able to experience any of the freedom-enhancing components of the technology. You completely eliminate all the privacy components that might be valuable. To people that are in like domestic abuse situations, like you sort of destroy Bitcoin in America. And at that point, you're turning all the Bitcoiners underground. I mean, it's just, there are millions of people who own Bitcoin in this country. It would be insane to attempt that type of backdoor ban, which is why we violently opposed it. We will continue to violently oppose any sort of attacks on self-custody. And even today, just recently, I don't know, you saw, we put out a sort of a call out, but we'll do future calls as well on this issue. But we put out a call out to tell people, write your members of Congress, let them know you oppose the Bitcoin mining 30% tax. Well, we've done that before as well in the past for self-custody issues.
That is the other big one that of course wanted to talk about. So the current administration has come up with this proposal to lay a excise tax on energy for Bitcoin mining up to 30%. And I guess it's supposed to be phased in over a period of years, starting with 10% in the first year, 20%, 30%, et cetera. So on its face, it seems kind of like, well, maybe that's not so bad, but it really is that bad, because what a lot of people don't realize is that a 30% excise tax on Bitcoin mining will effectively kill the entire Bitcoin mining industry in the United States of America, and it will move overseas. Like, when China did this thing where they banned Bitcoin mining, sure, it stopped it temporarily, but it just came right back. I mean, the first thing that happened is the hash rate went down. It just went overseas. But then it came right back. So, I think that would potentially really disrupt mining in America and just make it so that it would go to different countries.
Oh yeah, it would kill it. I mean, it'd basically be, virtually destroy the industry overnight. I mean, it's even a 10% tax could probably eliminate a good part of Bitcoin mining from this country. A 30% tax, I mean, that's a death sentence to Bitcoin miners who operate on very slim margins and who, given the opportunity, if they're told, hey, 30% tax here, but if you leave the United States, that tax essentially goes away. I mean, they're going to start building elsewhere, and they're not going to stop building these mining sites, and they're not going to stop trying to pursue their best opportunity where they can actually be profitable. At the end of the day, these are businesses, and it would be really sad because it there's so many benefits of Bitcoin mining: balancing the grid, mitigating methane emissions, enhancing renewables, being able to help new energy projects. This is a one that we don't talk about a lot because we haven't really seen it happen yet, but it absolutely will happen. But you have this buyer of energy who, you launch a new energy project, you can't get financing for it, you can't get anyone to buy the energy. All of a sudden now you have this buyer of energy who come in, and now research projects can get to implementation phase much, much, much faster than they were able to in the past. And that's a huge thing. But also rural jobs as well. Bitcoin miners are creating rural jobs across this country. And in some rural communities, for instance, in the case of like CleanSpark, I already know, we've had conversations with them about this, that some of the areas that they're going to where they are a taxpayer and they are paying a little bit of tax, like, listen, again, like it's not like miners are not paying taxes already. Like, this is just the 30% is an additional tax that they just want to use to kill the industry. Miners are paying taxes in all these communities. And in some cases, the communities are smaller and the miner is literally the biggest taxpayer in the entire community. And in some communities, their budgets are doubling or tripling and they're able to hire firefighters. They're able to hire people to help manage the local government. And so it's making a big difference in some of these smaller communities. And so by pushing the technology out, you're just totally eliminating the ability for Bitcoin mining to have a positive impact here in the United States.
Yeah, and that's huge. And that was actually a question that I had was the impact on economic development, workforce development types of issues, jobs creation. And I mean, you kind of touched on that already, because I know that some states are more focused on that than others. At least, you know, they actually are, you know, doing things in those. And I think that, you know, Georgia is one of them that I've seen where that is taking place. And I was wondering, you know, what type of data do they have on that so far? I mean, where they're showing the economic impact from a workforce development, from a jobs development sort of situation, and how are they able to make that information accessible to one another? And are they using that, some of the states, I guess, to, you know, to brag and to show off? And, you know, it's like you talked about that competition, you know, as Texas saying, hey, look, we've created this many jobs from the mining facilities that we've launched in our state. Are we seeing that take place yet, or is that still on the way?
We have not seen a ton of reports done on economic impact. We would love to see a lot more done. For us personally, though, at Satoshi Action, the biggest area of research that we want to see our industry lean into is actually from the energy perspective, because there is a lot of jobs that are being created, but it's not really the amount of jobs that would turn the head of a legislator. It's like, as an example, like when some of these really large, like Amazon facilities get built, you know, Google facility gets built, they talk about thousands of jobs from one site. Most miners are in the like 5 to 20 range. Now they are getting created in very rural parts of the states, and typically they are able to hire locally, which is very different from what these other sites are doing. You know, a lot of these big Amazon data centers, they're hiring people from outside the area. They're bringing them in, you know, and in certain cases, in some states, we've had them complain and lament about the amount of, you know, quote unquote, Californians that are sort of moving into the state to be able to hold these jobs. Well, that's different from mining. Mining doesn't require you to bring in some person from Silicon Valley to be able to manage the mining operation. You can hire locally, you can train and hire locally and create real local jobs that, you know, are for the people. So I will say that that's great, right? We love that. But that's not Bitcoin's and Bitcoin mining's, I should say, greatest feature. The greatest feature is that Bitcoin mining can balance the grid in a way that no other technology can. Bitcoin mining can mitigate methane emissions from landfills, from oil and gas operations, you name it, in a way that no other technology can. And Bitcoin mining can also help to be able to buy up excess energy and return higher ROIs on energy projects in a way that no other type of technology can. And so I want to see us as an industry, as the Bitcoin community, whatever you want to call it, get behind this idea that we need to start pitching that a lot harder. And but that requires resources, that requires people getting in the game and saying, listen, I really want to make sure America is a leader on this technology for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years to come. And I want to see the research take place that will help us to be able to prove to lawmakers that we can actually balance the grid, that we can actually mitigate methane emissions, and that we can actually create rural jobs. But we are not going to be able to do any of that without people getting behind those projects. And so that's a big part of what we do at Satoshi Action Education, is we say, fund this research, prove that what we say is real, and help America be a leader for the next 50 years on Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you mentioned education a few times, and of course that's a huge part of that. And I was wondering, you know, from a military perspective, let's say, you know, we have a force that's getting ready to go into an area of operations and we're going to attack. So a lot of times what will happen is we'll send in artillery and things like that to kind of go soften the target first, and then send in the main force. So, you know, without giving up, you know, too much information, share whatever you're comfortable with. When you're preparing to go into a state and engage in your action there, How much, I guess, of a vanguard move? How much of a recon do you send ahead to start educating people, to start, you know, proactively countering any FUD that they may have been exposed to? What does that look like for you to go in and start to educate the local population, who are of course going to sway the decision making of the politicians involved?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So there's two different verticals of education there. The public education generally needs, we hope that it generally happens more so with the people on the ground. We help those groups on the ground to be able to educate more so the local communities. And we really highly encourage Bitcoin miners to engage with the local community. We've had this problem in the past where miners have sort of stayed underground and been quiet, just want to do business, don't want to be bothered. Totally, I get that perspective, but that time is long gone. When you start to use 30, 40, 50 megawatts of power, in small communities, and then hundreds of megawatts of power in medium-sized communities, you will not be able to hide from the public anymore. And they are going to have an opinion about you. And so it's good to get out there. We've seen some really awesome miners do it. I was just talking to a gentleman from Indiana about Bit out there, and also Ilya over at Megawatt about this, and how valuable it can be to get out early and have these conversations with your local community and show them the value of the technology. So it's demystified, because the biggest problem oftentimes with mining is that it's so mysterious and people will just make up, you know, an idea of what it is in their head. And generally that idea is pretty far off, especially given that they're exposed to negative articles from organizations like the New York Times, who have for some reason have taken a bent against Bitcoin mining, which we still have yet to discover why that is. But on the other side of the coin, there's another education vertical, which you mentioned, which is educating the lawmakers. And that usually happens right about when we are going to go to committee. So you get a lawmaker, you get them on a call, you get an email going, you get a Zoom call going, and you start talking to them about the potential of the policy and why they should want to adopt it. They agree, they introduce the bill, then there's a committee hearing. Usually it'll be on the House or the Senate side. The committee will get together. It's anywhere from, you know, 7 to, some of these things are 20 people, some of them are huge. And they are like a microcosm of the greater body, right? Let's like as an example, you know, you have 435 members in the House in Washington, D.C., and they have sort of like the smaller committees where people are more experts on that type of issue. So you get to the committee, the bill is going to be heard for a hearing, and you go there ahead of time and you just start walking through the line and educating lawmakers that are on that committee, like where you stand on the issue, why you support the bill, why you think it's a good idea to adopt Bitcoin mining in the state. And generally those meetings go really well if we can get to the lawmakers and to be able to have those meetings. So we have a lot of success in that process. Sometimes there are events that are outside of our control that have a negative impact on what we're trying to do. But generally when we are in the room and we are educating on this stuff, like we have become very good at it and we have a great experience doing that with those lawmakers.
That is awesome.
I'd like to ask a follow-up question to kind of Gabe's point here is, you guys, you got to obviously have tremendous ROI in your resources. When you guys are looking at this, are you guys looking at the different types of power per state? Because I think it was Brent or Kent Halliburton that was on the show the other week, and he was talking about to be competitive within this mining space, you had to narrow it down to somewhere around 3 to 4 kilowatts, per mining hour or something like that, which is, you know, really something pretty special. I don't think we see a lot of that in the United States. Are you guys looking at, you know, places like the TVA in Tennessee and Northern Georgia, or do you guys kind of target areas because of, you know, the power costs in those areas, or how do you guys kind of go about filtering, you know, where the best places to go are and look at this?
Yeah, that's a great question as well. We don't typically target just based on energy profile. Mostly what we're trying to accomplish is going to areas of the country where we feel like we can have the biggest impact. And that's why you see pretty significant ROI on the work that we do, because we're not going to Washington, D.C. We're not going to New York. We're not going to California. These are states that are not only probably off the cuff, and Washington, D.C. in this case, it would be the federal government, but these three areas are off the cuff, not friendly to Bitcoin. And they're also extremely expensive to operate in. You know, you need millions of dollars to be successful in states like New York and California. And you need even more than that in Washington, D.C. And so what we are doing is it's a combination of a few different things. It's, you know, what's the energy potential for mining there? What's the potential for Bitcoin there? You know, how big is the state? You know, how likely are we to pass a bill there? a lot of that comes into focus, and that's where we decide to allocate resources. Now, we'll have lawmakers, for instance, like hit us up now, which is the new development where we used to have to go and sort of target lawmakers and say, hey, what do you think like about this policy? We want to pitch it to you. You know, maybe you're on board, maybe you're not. This year has been different. We've actually had multiple lawmakers reach out to us and say, or at least people that are working with those lawmakers and say, hey, can you help us? We saw that you're doing this. Can you help us do it in our state now too? So it's not always us now. It's the movement has sort of expanded beyond just us as an organization. And we have found a really effective place to operate in where we can not only impact lawmakers, but we can impact other groups that are not Bitcoin groups. As an example, you might have saw in Idaho, the Idaho Freedom Foundation is a sort of right-leaning think tank there in the state. And their policy director, Nick Loss, has taken a very specific position on Bitcoin and wants to see Idaho lead on Bitcoin. And so his group now is a Bitcoin group, right? But we're working really closely with them. There's another group called the Beacon Center out of Tennessee. We've been working really closely with them. There's a lot of these different little groups that we're working with that have not really sort of nothing to do with Bitcoin, but they are starting to now take a position on Bitcoin, and they're really interested in working with us on these issues. So that's another area that we're having an impact. We're not just, you know, orange pilling lawmakers, so to speak. We're also orange pilling and getting folks on board with our policies that are non-Bitcoin related groups that are in this space that are doing these things that are trying to pass law. So that's been a really interesting development. We're excited to see how that can continue to expand.
I love it. Hey, if you're out there, ladies and gents, and you want to be involved in what's going on in this space, get in touch with us. We have grown this Bitcoin veterans group from every week at 7 p.m. on Wednesdays to 7 p.m. on Thursdays. And it is now not only national, it is international. We have groups all over this nation that are doing amazing things within Bitcoin veterans. You can text us. You can go to Bitcoin veterans on Twitter. Send us a DM, get involved. We will add you to the chat groups. There is a million things going on. For instance, Gabe has the Operation Bitcoin, which is an amazing piece. And Gabe, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about Bitcoin or Operation Bitcoin real quick?
Sure. Thanks. Yeah. So Operation Bitcoin is a nonprofit organization that's providing Bitcoin education for military veterans. So we're a light node with Mi Premier Bitcoin. And our phase one is underway. And that, again, it's providing training and education. We are now we're offering the Bitcoin diploma and moving into, this is kind of top secret, so don't tell anybody that's not on the podcast right now, but we're moving into offering more technical training in the way of mining, rig repair, maintenance, and things of that nature. So we're expanding, and it's just because more and more people are coming to us and they're asking for it. So the need is there. We want to be sure that we have people that can work in the mining facilities. And that's why my questions always go back to workforce. But Operation Bitcoin, check us out. Like I said, we're a nonprofit. We're entirely donor funded. So anybody who wants to jump on the mission and support, always welcome. OperationBitcoin.io.
Awesome, man. And there's so much other stuff going on. Communications. If you want to learn communications, like ham radio, let's say, you know, things go down for a little while and you need to communicate. There's a group that is inside of Bitcoin veterans, like Alex had mentioned earlier, that have total control of the SIGINT type of signals intelligence, for those of you guys that don't speak. So in terms of operation of communications, ham radios, things like that, that if you need in a bad situation, or maybe you just want to do test shots of Bitcoin transactions, like complete nerds, like this is the place for you. These guys are amazing. There are Citadel networks that are popping up all over the network. These guys are talking about what it takes to, take over an area, provide security for it, what it's going to be as they develop. And it's going to be different for each and in every individual area. There's homesteading, there's homeschooling, there's Brave, which is a post-traumatic stress mission that I run. There is a million things going on inside of Bitcoin veterans, so much so we were talking before the show that we just can't keep up anymore. And so if you're out there, understand that maybe we're lurking a little bit in the backgrounds. If we're not responding, we appreciate you guys sharing everything that's going on, what we're doing, where we're at in these spaces. Big shout out to Susie Violet over at the Forbes magazine for getting involved with Bitcoin and talking about some of the links between psychedelics and post-traumatic stress and Bitcoin. That was an amazing article that came out earlier in the week that we got featured in. And I just got to say, you know, hats off to everybody that's out there working behind the scenes in this. It helps us bring on an amazing guest like Dennis Porter here, Preston Pish in the past, Corey Clipston, you name it. This is one of those spaces that is growing extremely rapidly. You guys can see like live numbers right now. We're above 500 people. And to do so in such a short amount of time, it's a big lift by everybody that's working behind the scenes in a decentralized fashion. So thank you to everybody out there for putting all this together, for making it happen, and for showing up. I mean, this is it. You know, it's proof of work, and you guys have got it in spades. But to get back to Dennis now, we've got this special segment here, and I just kind of want to give you a little prep time for it. We always share hysterical, fun, maybe even embarrassing stories. And you know, it's very easy to do with veterans. You know, we've all got those embarrassing stories that we've had from, you know, our time in the military. However, you know, you've been around, you've been running around the country, and you don't have to do it right now, but we'll do it before the show ends. You know, start thinking about maybe one of those great comedic, you know, times when maybe something wasn't going your way. You know, you adapted and prevailed and still came away with it, but maybe a funny story involved, maybe even a little embarrassing,
or something that was just like very, very difficult and challenging that you went through that ended up in hindsight being either funny or you learned something from it.
Picking stories, my favorite non stories to not tell. Which one should I tell? I would say that, I mean, like, just from like a sort of historical perspective of like where we are as an organization, and where it started, there was a period when I was trying to pass Bitcoin legal tender laws here in the USA. And it was like everything that I was focused on. And I was like so convinced that we could at least make some like marginal movements in the right direction. And I didn't know the process very well yet. And so, I was working with some people and they're like, okay, the bill is like introduced. And I'm a sort of a dummy and didn't realize that like there's actually like a way to check if it's been introduced. And so I went to go announce that it was introduced, and lo and behold, it was not introduced yet. And so then I got hounded by everyone for, I don't know, months, whatever it was, on that I was full of shit and that it was never happening. So it was a very embarrassing moment. And also I learned a lot from that moment. I learned never to announce something until it's ready and it's in your hand.
Yeah. It's a damn good lesson.
There you go. Well, I mean, I just want to say hats off to you, Dennis, because I mean, you've been learning in real time in public. Like this whole journey, I remember when you first started, and it's come a long way, you know. And personally, I'm very thankful for what you do, the work that you do. You're out there. I call it the man in the arena. There's a whole ton of people who like to criticize and say things about people who are out there making things happen and accomplishing things. And it's like, hey, man, if you ain't doing something and you're just like armchair quarterbacking and critiquing this guy who's like in the arena fighting with blood on his face and then like getting things done, shut up, do something yourself. You know, that's the way I feel about it. Maybe that's a little too aggressive, but I don't care.
I don't think it's aggressive enough. You know, there's a lot of people with some broken fucking lives out there that like to get into the Twitterverse and just, you know, it's the old, who's the butler of Batman saying, there are some men that just want to watch the fucking world burn out there. They've got no rhyme. They've got no reason. They've got a fucked up personal life. Something's going on. And all they want to do is criticize the guys that are out there making stuff happen. If I've seen anything in this space, and what I've definitely seen is this is the Renaissance. This is the Renaissance of art. It's the Renaissance of thought, of science, of energy creation. It is the architecture, you know, this semiotic code that is kind of infected all of our lives out there. And now we're building. You know, for the first time, these guys are building. You might not like what the other guy's building. However, they're fucking building. And if you're not building and you're criticizing these guys that are going out there and doing it, like, get a fucking life, for God's sakes. you know, if you want,
I mean, the flip side of that is if you don't like what they're building, go build something else.
That's right.
I mean, if
right.
what you're building yeah. is good, you're going to get people rallying behind you, you know, like I like to say to people who are in that mode, it's like, look, show me what you're building. If it's great, I will cheer you on. I will tell the world about you to the small extent of people who will listen to me or whatever the case may be. You know, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it, Alex. You've been a longtime supporter, and even when people were less optimistic about my chances. So appreciate that. And same with you, Shane, as well. And I agree. You know, it's like I kind of hit the same level, too. I used to be a little bit more like wily on Twitter. I blame that a little bit of being locked up in my house for 2 years here in Portland, Oregon. But, you know, I've really started to focus on being positive and having a positive impact. And attracting other people to me that want to have a positive impact, instead of just trying to, you know, bash on people and be the reply guy and get into Twitter debates, which was a fun short period in my life. Although there were certainly some painful moments, like debating Udi. but just in general, like my life, the people around me that are close to me, everybody is feeling very positive. But certainly, it's not easy to pass law and to protect Bitcoin. But we are full of passion and excitement to be able to be in this position to go this direction. And, you know, when people try to mess with me on Twitter, honestly, Alex, they almost don't even do it anymore because I stop engaging with them and I just stop talking to them. And now they just ignore me, which is fine. They can tweet all they want. It's not going to stop me from making sure the United States is the best place in the world to be a Bitcoiner and a Bitcoin miner.
Let's go.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
America.
Question for you, man. So, I mean, we've got there is a lot of us, man. There's a lot of Bitcoin veterans, and I'm going to tell you, this group of individuals, many of us come from a place in the past of nihilism, of being bitter about the future, and have found this thing called Bitcoin. And it's this like renewed sense of purpose. And we have got, I mean, these are people that are here to get shit done. And I mean, it's like we've talked about, there are multiple projects. The level of motivation and initiative that's being exercised here is amazing. And I say that to say, we're all over the country. And so what can this massive group of Bitcoin veterans do to support you on the local level where we are in our own respective states as you go forth on your mission? What can we do to back you up?
I love that. That's, before I go into how that you guys can sort of the veterans can help. And there's definitely ways where veterans can play a big part in this conversation. I'd like to just take a moment to recognize that idea of like going from a nihilistic sort of viewpoint to nihilism and sort of seeing a path forward and seeing the world, there's a potential, something to build here. That same exact thing happened to me, you know, in 2017, when I discovered Bitcoin, I was in a very nihilistic mindset. Didn't feel like there was anything really out there to live for, except for just, you know, myself and building my own world. And now that I discovered Bitcoin, like for the first time in a long time, I felt like there was a lot more to do, to add to the community. There was something bigger than myself that I could participate in. And, you know, the biggest thing that I noticed was when I started trying to mine Bitcoin in my basement, all of a sudden I was like driven to innovate. I was driven to deal with the noise, driven to deal with my own wiring. In fact, I almost killed myself twice and I swore that I would never do electrical work again in my life on 220 volt because I almost died. So, and then I had to deal with, you know, the heat, moving the heat around. But like all of a sudden I cared a lot about how to solve these problems. And in the past, I would have just been like, oh, this is too much to deal with. I'm not going to deal with this. But Bitcoin, for some reason, has this ability. I don't know what it is. That doesn't matter if you're left, you're right, you're religious, you're an atheist. If you come into an interaction with Bitcoin and you sort of grok Bitcoin, all of a sudden it seems to have this very strange impact on people where they seem to be highly motivated and highly engaged in making a big impact in society. It's a beautiful thing. I love it. Haven't figured out why, but it's real. And we see it taking place all the time. We see it taking place with the veterans. And the way the veterans can help is lawmakers love to hear from veterans. I mean, they love it. It's almost better than like peer-reviewed research or, you know, hearing from their local, you know, religious group sometimes, and they might be like a Christian hearing from the church. There's something about veterans that just cuts through everything. A veteran-owned business, like a veteran Bitcoin mining operation coming in and saying, hey, you know, this is why we support this bill. This is why we're all about it. that is hugely impactful. So I would say at bare minimum, you know, write letters to your lawmakers and tell them why you support Bitcoin. Even tell them a story of you know, how it had an impact on you from a, on a personal level, or show up to these events, show up to the times when we do these hearings. We would love if the Bitcoin veterans wanted to get in touch with us. And when we go to your state to try to pass a law to protect Bitcoin self-custody or Bitcoin mining, we are always asking for people to come testify. So, and Bitcoin veterans is like testimony gold. I don't know why. It's just a thing. Like with lawmakers, they just really love it. They sort of really listen keenly to veterans. So I would use your superpower with lawmakers to be able to go in and have those conversations.
Hell yeah. I tell you what, Dennis, let's coordinate on that later. Let's create some method of alerting us where you're going to be, when you're going to be doing it, and then we'll just put it out. So the way Bitcoin Veterans is organized is that we have a ton of different chat groups set up by regions throughout the United States, and then we can just, you know, tap those different areas and
right.
activate folks that are in those areas, and if they're interested in helping out, then maybe they'll drop in. I mean, we've got guys who are, look, we've got guys all the way up to almost general staff. I mean, right under colonel level dudes. Some of these guys are, I mean, active right now. We won't say who they are, and they won't say who they are, but we know. If we're able to do that, by all means.
Absolutely. And as a note too, before we, you know, wrap up here, but I can stay on as long as you guys want, if you want to keep going, but I'm sure people probably start to get bored of me past the 1 hour mark. So, but if you go to our website, you can actually sign up to volunteer. And in those notes there's like a little thing where it's like, what industry do you work in? Or what do you do? Like if you go to the website and you go to satoshiaction.io and you go to the volunteer button, it'll take you to a portal where you can fill out your information and where you're from and what, you know, what you do. That's really valuable because you can, when we go to ask for, right on the top there, the volunteer button on middle part. And when we go to those states where we say we need someone to help come testify like this, or we do a constituent day, this is where you fill that out and we sort of reach back out to you when the time is right. That'll probably start to happen more so in the middle of the year. We're coming to the end of the legislative cycle for most states right now. So, if you want to be a part of some of the changes that we're going to be doing in the next, 12 to 24 months, you know, go ahead and sign up there. And that'd be a big, help us make a big difference in the United States.
Cool.
Yeah. So they don't lose too much interest. This is where we get into story time. Story time is the fun time where we tell fun stories, maybe a little embarrassing, maybe not. I don't know. But have you been able to?
Well, he did a little one, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're talking, I mean, like, maybe more now. Let's give
tell us all the bad stories.
Tell us something more embarrassing, Dennis.
Yeah, they're like, that wasn't enough. That wasn't enough. I mentioned the Udi debate, too. That was pretty embarrassing. Yeah, I thought I had never tweeted that NFTs are a scam. And I looked it up to see to make sure that I never said it. And then I said in our debate that I never said NFTs are a scam, but I guess... Maybe. I did one time. They found a tweet.
That's the impulsive nature in all of us. You know, NFTs are a fucking scam. absolutely. If you guys have been blind the whole show, go out there and follow Dennis Porter. He's at Twitter at Dennis_Porter_. He runs the Satoshi Action Fund. He is a man on the move, and he has been moving and shaking around this nation. Going to kind of throw it around for some closing thoughts. Dennis, appreciate you really coming on here and telling us everything you're into, what you're looking at, your processes, your kind of procedures, and really giving us an opportunity to help out. This is an amazing thing for, you know, this group to be able to take on even more. Like, and that's what we're asking of everybody out there. If you want more MOAR, like, this is the group for you. Go out and fucking find something to do. There is more than enough out there. If you're sitting around and you got nothing, then you're just not looking in the right places. This is the group where we're going to get you action. We're going to get you connected. It's a great group of people that are absolutely on the mission. So, Dennis, any closing words for the rest of us where we can do anything, help you out? We kind of covered a little bit of that, but any closing remarks?
Yeah, right in the same vein, when it comes to Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining, there's so much opportunity out there. This is the wild, wild west. It's the digital wild west. and there are many things to be discovered, many rocks to be sort of turned over to find new ways that Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining can have a positive impact. I mean, it was like, 5 years ago, nobody even knew that Bitcoin mining was like going to balance the grid or mitigate methane emissions, but now everybody knows about it. So, you know, get out there and start discovering, start building. For us as an organization, we don't have anything to advocate for, so to speak. We don't have anything to show lawmakers if there aren't people here in America building, and whether that's building a Bitcoin mine, whether that's building an app, whether it's, you know, you name it, you build something on Bitcoin, then I have something to talk about with lawmakers, which gives me the ability to better advocate for the technology because they want to see real world examples. So go out there and build those real world examples so that we can continue to make the USA the best place in the world to be a Bitcoiner and a Bitcoin miner, but also through our leadership, help the whole world be the best place in the world, you know, the best world, the best planet, who knows? I don't know if we're going to get into alien theories yet on this this podcast, but make the United States the leader on what is essentially a global movement. Because when the United States leads on something, the whole world tends to follow. And I hope that we lead on this and not something like CBDCs.
Hell yeah. Alex, Gabe.
I just want to say thanks for it's necessary, man. Okay. The political side of things, it's necessary. I mean, it's not my cup of tea. I've made my view on most politicians, present company excluded. Pretty well known. Current and or former, but you're what you're doing is necessary, and I appreciate it. I don't think everybody is cut out to go out there and to interact with, you know, with folks that are, you know, politicians, and that's what they do all the time. And it's a skill, and it requires a certain style of communication. And I just don't think that everybody's cut out for it, but it's absolutely necessary that it's taking place. And I appreciate you throwing yourself into the mix and leading the way and making that happen. I'm excited to see what type of support that the Bitcoin Veterans Group can offer to you. Cause I think it could be significant, cause what you're doing does matter, and it is impacting our country, in an important way. You know, and the more I hear conversations from people who are, you know, they're talking about, you know, leaving the country and they're going to go somewhere else and they're just going to, you know, and, you know, more power to them. If that's their plan, that's fine. But I don't plan on leaving. This is my home. This is where all my people are. And I don't plan on leaving because governments are going to do things a certain way. And it's my intention to make it better for my people and for the people coming behind us. And so I believe that that's what you're doing, and I appreciate it. So thank you.
Yeah. No. Thank you. And it's maybe I'm a glutton for pain or something like that, but we do have a lot of fun in the process. You know, it is a lot of work, and you know the chances of success are low. But when you win, I mean, there's no better feeling than knowing that you help protect, you know, people's fundamental Bitcoin rights here in America, and that we kept Bitcoin here, right? Because everybody's trying to leave, and if we leave all the Bitcoiners are going to leave away, then what they're going to leave behind a country that could have been better off if they had stayed. So I'm trying everything I can to do to protect the Bitcoiners that want to stay and to convince the ones that want to leave that maybe this should, give the United States a more long-term chance to regain its position as a leader on freedom and on technology and innovation. So I think we can get there. And with the help of the veterans, that'll be a big part of it.
You know, to Gabe's point, the thing about folks leaving and whether you stay, whether you want to try to stand up for what's going on here in America. I think there's a lot of veterans, as Gabe has indicated, there's millions of us. There's a lot of veterans who basically love this country dearly. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. We volunteer to go get shot at and blown up. Right. So I want to emphasize that like this whole thing with Bitcoin veterans is a totally peaceful thing. We want this to be a very, very peaceful thing. And in the interim, if it ever doesn't get peaceful, by the way, we're never going to advocate for any kind of violence. But I will say, if they come at us, we're definitely going to freaking defend ourselves. I can fucking promise you that. But in the interim, hopefully we never get to that. But in my opinion, Dennis, like what you're doing out there, it's a different kind of fighting. You know, it's mental, emotional, spiritual warfare that you're dealing with every single day. Maybe you're not dealing with kinetics and you're not shooting bullets. You're not, you know, doing all the stabby, blow things up thing. But, yeah, I appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. I appreciate that.
Dennis, I got to tell you, man, I was like, man, we're going to shame the shit out of this guy for not coming on when we got the 7 o'clock mark. Dude,
I started before you got here.
I knew it was live. I knew it was live too. So I was like, I cannot find this link. I was like, I don't know where it is. And then all of a sudden I found it last second. I come on and the intro is playing. I was like, oh yes, just in time. So good.
It's like, we're going to have to change the fucking background and everything else for God's sake. Right. Like, I'm going to have to call this a different show. We're going to we'll do it live. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for all the great information and really appreciate the really hard work, the slings and arrows that you take out there. It is, as a guy that's been out there in the shitty realm of politics and seeing this stuff firsthand, my man.
I know.
And I know what it takes behind the scenes where you're actually dealing with these slimy bastards on a daily basis. It's got to get.
Not all of them are slimy. No,
they're scaly, right? Okay. Scaly. Okay. I got it.
Shane, don't make it harder for him. He's got to deal with these people all the time. We're not trying to create hate here. Just don't watch our other episodes.
We are not associated in any other form.
We have very good relationships with the people that we work with, but we don't work with everybody. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's right. And the people that don't work with you, those are the slimy bastards. So I'm going to tell you right now, or the scaly bastards. If you're a politician, possibly that's getting wind of this show, hey, look, Dennis is salt of the earth people. This is where we're headed. If you want to be successful in politics going into the future, you need to understand that Dennis Porter is one of those guys that you need to listen to. He is going to help you steer in the right direction, not only your political career, which you might be, you know, that little precious ring and Smeagol with, but the people that you're supposed to represent. So this is my message to the people in politics. You want to get ahead going into the future? Politics is going to change. As Bitcoin continues to grow and we move down this continuum from fiat bullshit world into amazing Bitcoin standardization world, if you're not moving down that realm with guys like Dennis Porter and Bitcoin veterans and the rest of this organization that's trying to see and bring out the best in humanity and grow a species into a Kardashev one type of society, you're fucking missing out. This is the path to a brilliant future that's based in capital and not debt and slavery. So thank you, Dennis, for everything you're doing out there, man, and what you're taking on, being away from home and everything else in those travels, dealing with maybe some unsavory types at the same time, and then all the bullshit haters on Twitter. If you're those guys, man, go out there and get involved. If you want to, we'll steer you in the right direction. If you're one of those guys that's angry, that's yelling on Twitter all the time at whatever is going on and where people are building, hey, maybe take a step back. Come over here. Let us point you in maybe the right direction. We've got some amazing people that can kind of, I don't know, let's do some de-escalation, some peaceful transitioning, and get you involved. You can DM us at Bitcoin Veterans on Twitter. I don't know. We got a billion things going on. We'd love to have you over here and point you in the right direction. Dennis, if you need anything from Bitcoin Veterans, just say the word. Go out there, support Dennis. Again, it's Dennis_Porter_ on Twitter. And you can find him at satoshiaction.io. And he is the CEO and co-founder of Satoshi Action Fund. Man, thank you so much for being with us for the hour and a half. Dennis, really appreciate you, brother. And for everybody else, we will see you next week, 7 p.m. on Thursday. Who's our guest next week? We've got
Matt O'Dell.
Matt O'Dell.
Next week. Yeah. And then after that, it's going to be Alex Vetsky.
Yeah, we got a couple big weeks lined up after this, so make sure you mark your calendars. Smash the like button, the subscribe button, get every notification. Till then, we'll see you next week.
Later.
All right.